So you want to keep some chickens. Here's what you should know. Lots of Mainers keep chickens these days, even in the busy suburbs and cities. In addition to the eggs, chickens provide fertilizer. They eat ticks and other insects, and they're just fun to have around. But there are some things you should know in order to keep your birds happy and healthy and to minimize the impact on your neighbors and your own family. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, we'll talk with a panel of experts on backyard chicken keeping who can lay out some of the basics on feeding, watering, and caring for small flocks of poultry during the hot summer months and in the coldest stretches of winter. And as always, we want to hear from you. Do you keep chickens, or are you thinking about it? Advice on backyard chickens. First, this news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. You may have noticed that keeping chickens has become the in thing these days. Suburban families and urban hipsters alike are raising backyard chickens. Of course, here in Maine, it's nothing new, but it's certainly growing in popularity. What's the appeal of raising chickens? What are the benefits, and what are the pitfalls of being a chicken keeper? Joining me in our studio, Lisa Steele. She's a chicken keeper in Dixmont and the author of books on raising poultry, as well as the blog Fresh Eggs Daily. In our Bangor studio, Donna Coffin. She's a professor with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. And as always, we want to hear from you. Are you considering getting a few chickens? Do you already have chickens and are having problems or any questions? Our phone number, as always, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net or tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome, Lisa and Donna, to Maine Calling. In the interest of full disclosure, I am a chicken keeper of several years. And what's interesting is that I have so many questions. I have more questions every year about this really fun hobby, but I also have some advice for those who ask the question, as did a colleague of mine before we came on air. She said, is it worth it? She's considering starting keeping chickens, and her question was, is it worth it? Maybe it's a question we could save for the end of the show, Lisa, but I'll start with you and say, I guess, what are the benefits of chicken keeping?
Well, it definitely is worth it. Hopefully at the end of the show, everybody will have come to that conclusion. But if you take a fresh egg and you compare it to a store-bought egg, that's really the only thing you need to know. They're just more vibrant orange. The whites are thicker. They taste better. So there's really no comparison.
And Donna Coffin, what are some of the reasons that people keep chickens these days outside of the people in the egg or poultry business?
Well, I think the reason that they go for chickens, it's like our entry-level livestock. It can be a very short-term type of animal. You can learn whether you want to have the responsibility of caring for an animal, twice a day before you move on up to pigs or sheep or goats or beef animals. So it provides a newbie something to get their feet wet.
Yeah, a little toe.
Go ahead. I was going to say, if you're just starting out, you could start with broilers, and that's just an 8 to 10 week type of commitment.
With broilers.
Short-term chickens. Yeah. See, now I think one of the appeals of chickens is that for those who are just starting homesteading or getting into it, they might not be quite ready to raise animals and eat them. So they can raise chickens and they can eat the eggs, but the chicken becomes more of a pet. But they don't have to necessarily commit to the butchering and the processing, which some people get to eventually because that's the path that they're on. But other people just are happy with their backyard pets that lay them eggs.
I wanted to ask about this, the conventional wisdom that's out there that chickens eat ticks and therefore that's a good thing. Do we have any, I guess, way to measure, Donna Coffin, whether that's a proven benefit?
Well, they certainly will eat ticks, but as far as relying on chickens as your only tick control, you probably don't want to do that. You still want to take personal protection. You want to check yourself every time you've been out, Make sure you don't have any ticks crawling all over you. We do have a tick ID page, an extension that has some information on how to manage ticks either with landscape modification or pesticides or biological controls.
Let's start at the beginning then. Let's say someone's listening right now, has never kept chickens and is interested in doing so. Are they looking at the spring, Lisa, before they should begin to think about jumping in?
Here in Maine especially, I would say yes, because a baby chick needs heat for the first 8 weeks or so. So if they're not under a mother hen, you're going to have them in the house under a heat lamp, and you really don't want to start that in, say, October, because you're going to end up with chickens in the house till spring, and they're going to be big. So if you start spring, then by the time they're off the heat, they have all summer to feather out, get bigger, and then they'll be fine when winter comes.
And so you order the chickens in the spring. They arrive a few weeks later, maybe a month later. But you got to be ready for them. As you said, they will stay inside for a while. It's still cold in the spring, so you keep them in a container, what, with a heat lamp and as when they're very, very little, right?
Right. A plastic tote, a cardboard box. You know, you have to have a little nursery called a brooder set up with a heat lamp, food, water. And that's about 8 weeks. And after 8 weeks, they're a pretty good size.
But they're not going to lay at 8 weeks.
No.
Even when they're fully grown, it takes a while for them to start producing eggs. How long does it take to see your first egg?
I always get excited around 18 weeks old. That's when I think, oh, they could be getting ready. But maybe 22, 24 weeks is the average. Some breeds take a little bit longer.
And Donna, speaking of breeds, Maine can have pretty significant temperature extremes. Should you consider certain breeds as more hardy than others and more suitable for Maine weather?
Well, I think it depends on what you want to do with the chickens. If you're interested in colored eggs, then you want to go with there are Easter egg breeds that are, so-called Easter egg breeds you can get. You do need to have some sort of housing for them so that they can overwinter. You don't really want to put a single or a couple of chickens out in a building. You need to have several so that they can gain heat from each other, and you have plenty of bedding helps them out. I did want to mention that instead of buying baby chicks, there are more and more possibilities that people can get ready-to-lay pullets. And if you're thinking about starting egg layers in the springtime, you get a pullet. It's the right time of the year. We have the right daylight length, and they can start laying, and you'll get eggs your first summer.
Yes, that is a good point. I prefer the chicks just because they're really cute and they're fun, but but it is a lot easier to start with the pullets because you just kind of bypass that whole baby stage.
And it's, talk about, Lisa, sexed or unsexed. I noticed this when I was buying chicks. You want sexed because you want hens, but unless you don't care and you might get a rooster thrown in.
Right. You know, if you're in an area that you can't have roosters or you don't want a rooster, then you want the sexed chicks.
Okay. Now, let's get then to the coop. This was an experience. I've built several so far. I've learned quite a bit about it. But I guess, first of all, Donna, you want to make sure it's secure, right? That's the first thing. It has to be pretty robust.
It needs to be secure from predators. A lot of times folks might forget that we have weasels and raccoons and foxes that might enjoy your chickens as, a nice snack. So you want to have, facilities that are going to prevent wildlife from getting in. And you'll need a place that you can store your feed so it won't get wet, won't get moldy. You'll need, if you're going to be keeping them during the winter, you'll probably want to have electricity out there so you can have some type of a heater for your water so that they'll have liquid water to drink. I will mention Extension does have a number of fact sheets on keeping chickens or, different chicken topics. And if you go to UMaine Extension Publications Poultry, you can pull up all of our publications. We also have a website that will link you to that, too.
Now, Lisa, my son wanted to ask, do you need to insulate the coop? You know, we think about how cold it is in Maine winters, and it's hard to believe that something could survive when it's 20 below out there. But these are birds, and they're pretty hardy. But you do have to pay attention to extreme temperatures, both hot and cold in a coop.
Well, you do. And chickens are far more susceptible to heat than to cold. We moved from Virginia. In Virginia, it was very hard on them because it was so hot. And this first winter in Maine, and I'm glad Donna did not mention coop heat. She mentioned the electricity just for the water, because I have not ever recommended heating your coop. And we moved to Maine, and I thought, these chickens are not used to this. They're not used to temperatures down to zero. It was negative 16 one morning when I woke up. I opened the coop door. I thought I was going to have frozen chickens. But they were fine. They, as Donna said, they're pretty hardy. I don't have an insulated coop, but I line the walls with straw bales in the winter. So that takes up a lot of the dead space. It acts as insulation. And then in the spring, you know, I take them out and I can use them as the bedding in that. So you have to be aware of it. You still want your coop to be well ventilated so they get fresh air and moisture doesn't build up. But really, heating a chicken coop is not necessary. It's really dangerous. It can cause a lot more harm than good. So I think Donna and I are on the same page there.
Yeah. And Donna, you mentioned you need more than a couple of chickens. What's the, I guess, optimum number for a small backyard flock?
Well, if you're just raising chickens for your family, remember you'll get about 200 eggs per hen a year. And so if there's just you and one other person, you're going to need quite a few recipes on how to use eggs. If you have a large family, then, you know, you can go up to 10 or 12 chickens. But there'll be some loss, you know, from different things. So, you know, you want to probably start with at least six. And I know later on you're going to have Justin on, and he can talk about the minimum numbers that you can purchase, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I did want to focus also, Lisa mentioned, on ventilation, and it's people may be tempted to seal up their chicken house so that no heat escapes. And that's dangerous. If you walk into your poultry house and there's a strong ammonia smell, you've got to ventilate, because that ammonia can harm your chicken's lungs. And so fresh air is better. Even if it's cold fresh air, it's better than that ammonia smell.
I have to confess now that one of our biggest failures in chicken keeping has been loss to predators. And we've been pretty thorough about pretty thorough, but they're very good at getting in. They're smart, and if they're hungry, they find ways to get in. But I wanted to ask about chicken wire. I had assumed that all chicken wire was the same, and discovered big holes ripped in the side of my chicken wire. So, Donna, chicken wire is not all the same, I guess.
Well, what we call chicken wire, it kind of looks like a honeycomb pattern. Mm-hmm. That's not going to keep any of your predators out. It will keep the birds in. What we're suggesting is a half-inch hardware cloth. It looks like screening, but it has the half-inch holes. It's a stronger material. It will keep the predators out, and it will give you some structure. If you're putting them out in a fenced yard, it will give you a little bit of more structure to the fence, too, so you can use just a few fence posts.
Now, that's more expensive, though, Lisa, when you're using that type.
It is. And people, you know, they want to cut corners, and it's true. My grandmother, I'm laughing, Donna, because my grandmother used to say that chicken wire was not meant to keep anything out. It was meant to keep chickens in. Mm-hmm. So the half-inch welded wire is what I use on everything, on the coop windows and on the run. It's more expensive, but in the long run, the expense of having to, you know, always replace your chickens, or the heartache, you know, if your child goes out especially and finds that something has gotten into your run or your coop, that you can't put a price on that. So you got to spend the money and do it right the first time.
And chickens are diggers, so they will they can dig on the inside, and predators are very good at digging too. So is it important, Donna, to get the chicken wire, the protective layer, you know, down into the earth?
Yes, you want to dig a trench and fold the chicken wire down in there so that when a predator is trying to dig, they'll dig into the folded corner and they'll give up. But you do need to have a trench to put that chicken wire down in.
So the call,
and I will mention, I will mention, if you go to our extension's poultry website, we do have a link to our e-extension. It's a national website that has a lot of webinars, and there is a webinar about predators and preventing poultry predation.
Does having a dog help fend off predators?
As long as your dog doesn't eat your chicken.
That's what I was going to say.
Can you use sprays or any other kinds of tricks to discourage predators?
I think everything helps. I mean, I have blinking solar lights. I mean, even though my chickens are locked in their coop each night, I have the blinking solar predator lights because I don't even want anything trying to get in. They do stay in a run when we're not outside with them. We have dogs. But like you said, predators are so they're so smart. And that's their main focus is to get your chickens. So everything you can do is an extra layer of security.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think domesticated dogs are one of the top predators. Mm-hmm.
Are they? Yeah.
And that surprises people that their beloved golden retriever would go out and kill all their chickens.
I was struck by how many predators were suddenly attracted to my property. So, you know, there's I'd never seen a red fox jumping up and looking in my dining room window before, but raccoons in particular, who are so crafty, they all just seemed to come to my house for a party once these chickens had been established.
And the latches have to be raccoons can slide deadbolts, they can lift up eye hooks, so you have to have latches that, you know, either click down and there's a carabiner on them, or you have a locking eye hook. It has to be something that a raccoon can't undo.
And are those, what are the primary predators? Are raccoons, foxes,
fisher cats,
weasels,
yeah,
hawks.
And in terms of eggs, rats may also
snakes.
Find their way in, and snakes,
skunks, possums, porcupines.
Right. They all like chicken, I guess. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, some of your questions and comments. Again, to join the conversation, the number is 800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about keeping chickens in your backyard, how to keep them happy and healthy. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Casella, dedicated to improving air quality for all Mainers through a commitment to reduce its carbon footprint. Casella, giving resources new life. And South Street Linen, women's clothing, all in linen and made in Maine, at 5 South Street in Portland, or online at southstreetlinen.com.
The Department of Justice recently announced it would be ending its contracts with privately operated prisons, which hold non-citizen federal inmates. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with investigative reporter Seth Fried-Wessler, who reported on troubling conditions and poor medical care at those prisons for the nation. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock. Sports teams are well established at high schools around Maine, but what about academic teams? Maine Public Television's new high school quiz show gets underway this coming school year, a high school quiz show similar to the Granite State Challenge in New Hampshire and WGBH Boston's high school quiz show. Teams from around Maine will represent their schools and compete against each other. Are you a superintendent, principal, teacher, parent, or student who is interested? We're looking for teams to compete in our first year and have complete information, what's involved, the schedule, how to register, all at mpbn.net. Just click on television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, the ins and outs of keeping backyard chickens. With me in our studio, Lisa Steele. She raises chickens in Dixmont and has written books on the topic. Joining us from our Bangor studio, Donna Coffin with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. We invite you to join the conversation as well. The number is 800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now on the line is Justin Bergeron, an assistant state veterinarian with Maine's Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Keith.
People, you know, may think that raising chickens is just a simple thing. You get some chickens and you put them in your backyard. But there are some regulations that they need to know about, right? Could you tell us, are there licenses or state rules or local rules that apply?
There's lots of local rules that apply. So you need to check with the town that you're living in. Different towns have different ordinances as far as how much property you have, if you can even have chickens, how many chickens you can have, and whether or not roosters are allowed to live on your property. One of the state rules that's important to remember when you're buying chicks is that you have to buy them in a minimum of six at a time. You can buy seven or eight, but it has to be a minimum of six. And that's to help make sure that the chicks are going to do well together. And it really is a commitment to raising these little beings.
Yeah, so when you say they do well together, there's sort of safety in numbers or warmth in numbers, or their survivability is better when there are at least six?
Well, it's more of a warmth in numbers, and it also makes sure that they have other chickens around. So it's not just one individual chicken. Single chickens rarely do well by themselves, especially as they're growing.
Yeah. A while back, there was the, of course, the avian flu scare, and there was talk about how backyard flocks would somehow contribute to some spreading health problem. That hasn't come to be, but are there common diseases that chicken owners need to watch for, or any sort of public health issues?
Of course. We're always watching out for common diseases like mycoplasma. And anything that looks like flu, these little animals are very isolated inside your backyard. So the key for us is biosecurity. You want to make sure you keep the germs from the wild animals out and from even other flocks. They're just like sending little kids off to school or to daycare. They go and they mix their diseases there, and then they come home with a runny nose. So the best thing you can do for biosecurity is if you go and visit your neighbor's flock, change your clothes before you go out and do your chores and only wear clean clothes there. Other public health concerns is if you're eating your own eggs, just make sure that the eggs are washed off. And commercial eggs are all washed and sanitized. But chickens in general can carry salmonella, so that's normal for them. So we want to make sure the eggs are washed, and especially with our small children that will help us with chores and love the chicks and love handling the birds, and they do really well with them, if they wash their hands before they eat. And it's just a general good practice that after we handle our chickens and chicks, to wash our hands.
And that's not just because, I mean, they're walking around in muck, and they're sort of, they're farm animals, so you want to wash your hands. But is the concern about also salmonella on the birds?
Yeah, they carry it normally within their body. So to them, it's a perfectly normal bacteria. It doesn't hurt them. So they just have it around them. They're not necessarily in a dirty area. Even really clean birds can have different strains of salmonella that we worry about.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is a veterinarian question, but you mentioned to wash the eggs. But can you, or should you, I guess, keep the eggs unwashed until you're ready to use them? Or can you wash them and let them sit? I've heard differing views on that.
It is a personal preference, and I prefer that you wash the eggs because all bacteria can grow depending on the condition. So I personally don't like dirty eggs in my fridge, and so I would wash them before you even put them in the container and then put them in the fridge. Or if you're storing them outside of a fridge, I would definitely recommend washing them from my point of view.
Okay, Justin Bergeron, Maine's Assistant State Veterinarian. If you can stick around and maybe answer a few questions from listeners, that would be great.
This is Donna. I just mentioned you don't want to dip your eggs in a bowl of water. You want to have the water flowing over the egg, because if you dip eggs in a bowl, you're going to cross-contaminate them all.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Yes.
So you don't want to be dipping the eggs into a bowl of dirty water, and you want the water to be warm also, so it would pull any bacteria away from, as opposed to into the shell.
Now, when eggs are really dirty, as they sometimes can be, can you use soap to get it off, or should you not?
There is a special egg wash material that you can buy.
Yeah, they do sell commercial egg wash. I just use warm water. And the really dirty eggs, I'll sometimes scramble up for our dogs or, you know.
Right. Okay, let's take a few calls here. The phones are are lighting up. So let's go to Tom in Saco. Hi, Tom.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Appreciate it. I had a quick question. As one of your guests could address this for the listeners. This doesn't affect me directly because it's a good 300 or 400 yards from my home. But I live in a middle class urban area, and I noticed a neighborhood put in. Forgive me if I don't use the right terminology. A chicken dog house. I don't know. It looks like they have 6 or 7 chickens in the backyard. And I noticed shortly thereafter, one of the neighbors put up what is clearly a very expensive fence separating it. And then I was jogging one morning by there very early, and I heard them crowing, I guess you'd call it, really loud. I'm thinking, oh, my God, these poor neighbors. And I was wondering if you could address, I know there's probably a lot of people listening going like, oh, boy, it'd be great raising some chickens in the backyard. Can you address how maybe they should, even if the zoning allows it, maybe think about how it impacts the neighbors and their perceptions and how it fits into that particular neighborhood?
Sure.
Thanks a lot for taking the call.
Sure. Lisa, we'll start with you. And I think as we mentioned, roosters are really loud. Hens tend not to be that loud, but
well,
it can be, I guess.
Hens can be. When they lay their egg, they can really make a ruckus. And, you know, the caller has a really good point because just because you are allowed to keep chickens, I think you still need to be conscious of your neighbors. Because especially in neighborhoods and the more urban areas that are allowing chickens, these people didn't sign up to live in the country. So they don't necessarily want to hear your chickens. Or they don't want your chickens hopping the fence into their yard and ruining their flower beds and that. So I do think you need to be very conscious of your neighbors. I think it's a good idea to go around and talk to all your neighbors before you get your chickens. Just kind of assess how they feel about it, maybe address any concerns they have. I think it's a good idea because you really do not want to antagonize all your neighbors.
Maybe a dozen eggs here and there can
and
also.
And eggs are a good bribe, yes.
Okay, let's go to Jane in Richmond. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. We've had chickens for 30 years or more, and I'd just like to caution people who are thinking about getting into raising chickens to think twice before solving the housing problem by buying the ready-made coops that I've seen for sale at feed stores or even the big box stores. They're not adequate to protecting chickens from Maine winters. They're often way too small. I mean, I'd say the ones I've seen mostly would adequately house a couple of chickens, and the ventilation is often not very good. And as one of your experts said, that's almost as important as cold protection.
Yeah. Yeah, Donna, any thoughts about the, I guess, depends on what
chicken,
they are. But
chicken dog houses,
yes,
or whatever?
Yes,
if there are some people that will provide, like, rent-a-chickens during the summer, and, you know, utilizing a small type of a enclosure like that might be acceptable. But if you're going to keep chickens during the winter, you probably want to have something that you can actually walk into so you can easily clean it. You can easily check on them. You can have the feed in there, too. You want to make it person size instead of just doghouse size.
Okay, I have to follow up on this rent-a-chicken idea. How does that work?
Well, there are some people that, are only in Maine during the summertime, and they do want to enjoy fresh eggs. And there are folks that this is where you'd buy the pullets that are ready to lay. And then at the end of fall, find a home for them or take them to market or something like that.
I see. Interesting. Okay. Jane, any follow-up?
Well, I just say not to look at raising chickens as a short-term hobby because we have chickens that are 12 years old. I mean, this can be a long-term thing. They're very intelligent. I think they attach themselves to people. It's really something to consider very seriously because they're sentient animals with feelings and Anyhow, not just a hobby.
Right. I have to agree with her. You know, a lot of my readers got into chicken keeping maybe 4 or 5 years ago. The kids were in high school or grammar school, and it was a family thing. Well, now the kids are off at college, and the parents have these 6 or 8 year old chickens that aren't laying eggs anymore, could live for another 4 or 5 years. You know, and they don't really know what to do. They didn't have a plan B because they didn't really expect it to be a long-term thing like that. It was something fun for the kids to do. So that's a good point, that you really have to think your plan out and make sure that you're ready for the commitment.
Mimi in Orrington writes, I've had a smallish flock of free-range chickens for 14 years. They are allowed and encouraged to live their full lives out, which leads to many treatable ailments that are otherwise dealt with by culling. Is there someone, anyone, to whom I can turn when I have unusual health-related questions? An example, the gnarled feet with which many of my old ladies get. I do have a self-appointed watchdog who keeps away predators, including northern goshawks. Justin, I guess I'll turn to you on that. Is there anyone who can help with, I guess, the special problems of geriatric chickens for those who are keeping chickens beyond their laying age?
Yes, there is. The Department of Ag Conservation and Forestry has a list of veterinarians around the state that do see poultry. It's a growing list. We're getting more and more veterinary practitioners that are seeing poultry, and we're willing to share that with anyone that would like it. The other thing is to foster that relationship with your vets early in your chicken experience as you're raising them. That way they know what your housing is like and the kind of ailments to expect as time goes on.
Yeah, and Donna, does the Cooperative Extension deal with this issue?
We do have a necropsy lab that after your birds have succumbed and you want to figure out what has caused it so you can protect the rest of your birds, that might be an option. Another thing is, if you're on Facebook, there is a special Facebook group called Maine Poultry Connection, Maine only, that Scott de Morinville is the administrator on. And that's poultry keepers helping other poultry keepers.
Okay. Let's go to Peggy in South Portland. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Keith. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm a big fan and good friend of Lisa's. Lisa, it's Peggy Kaiser. How are you?
Hi, Peggy.
And I just wanted your calling audience to know what an immense resource she is. And we're so lucky to have her in the state of Maine. She's only been here about a year. Is that right?
Yes. Last August we moved here. That's right.
And a lot of the other source that your guest just mentioned too, Scott's Facebook page is fantastic, but Lisa's website too is invaluable. And I go to her Fresh Eggs Daily all the time just to check out health concerns. I have chickens. I should have said that right off the bat. And
how many do you have, Peggy?
Well, I'm in South Portland, and we have to get a permit, and we're only allowed 6. And we're not allowed roosters, which I know one of your guests was talking about the permitting process. I think in the more urban cities, that's the case. In the more rural places, it's not a problem. But my neighbors are very, very close on both sides, and I did check with them before I got chickens. And I give them eggs all the time. So it kind of works out really well.
Yeah. Now, are you? Does your whole family, Peggy, care for the chickens? Or
well,
is someone get left to hold it?
I have them now. They're my girls. My middle daughter wanted chickens, and we got them. And now, as someone else had said, she has gone to college and graduated. She's back home. But I pretty much have taken over the care of the chickens. In fact, my chickens have spawned a small business that I do from my house. So it's really become a big part of our life. So,
all right.
But, yeah. So they're mine.
All right. Well. Thanks for joining in. Good luck with those birds.
Thanks, Peggy.
All right. Let's go to Luann in Topsom. Hi, Luann.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. This is a great conversation. Somewhat new to keeping chickens here in Topsom, and the questions I had were regarding cleaning the coop. Actually, my first question was about cleaning the coop. I'm just wondering, kind of from the experts, what generally is a good guideline to follow in terms of like how often to clean the coop and what that should just generally entail. And then secondly, I was wondering about thoughts regarding the deep litter method for wintertime.
Lisa is nodding about deep litter. We'll start with that one. First of all, what is deep litter?
Well, this is an awesome question, especially in Maine. It's basically you're composting inside your coop. So instead of, say, cleaning out your coop every week in the winter in Maine and trudging through feet of snow and pulling out the straw, putting in new, and I do recommend straw in Maine in the winter because it's a great insulator, but you basically start building up a layer of straw, maybe shavings, the chicken manure, and you keep turning it and you get it up to maybe about a foot thick. And through the winter, you just keep turning it. The chickens turn it as they scratch through looking for whatever they're looking for. And it creates a little bit of heat, which is nice. It also creates positive, good microbes, which I'm sure Donna, you know, would probably, and Justin would know more about.
Is this on the ground or inside that you're talking
about? It's inside the coop.
Inside the coop.
Mm-hmm. So okay. as the coop bedding, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. And in the winter in Maine, it's wonderful because it's less work and it does create a little bit of heat. And then come spring, you just kind of rake it all out into your wheelbarrow and you have this beautifully composted kind of dirt. So I love it. I was using it in Virginia. Not as great because it's not as cold there, but mm-hmm. here in Maine, it's just a beautiful method for coop management through the winter.
So if you're not doing that, how often should you clean the coop?
As needed. You know, again, you turn the bedding over, and if you smell any ammonia, like Donna mentioned, the least bit of ammonia, I would clean everything out. But it depends on how many chickens you have, how big your coop is, how thick your litter is. You really have to just kind of judge when it starts to look like it needs a cleaning.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. The number 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, proud to offer free educational workshops for students and community groups, hhrcmaine.org.
On the next Radio Lab.
Boom. Explosion.
Automatic weapons.
Who do we want to shoot? Lots of people. When do we want to shoot them?
Yesterday.
What's the face that you see when you picture a terrorist?
There was two young boys. Cute little young, innocent-looking boys.
And what if you're wrong?
What I saw does not make sense.
It's a gut thing.
That's on the next Radio Lab.
Do you feel any safer?
And you can tune in for Radio Lab Saturday afternoon at 1 or Tuesday evenings at 11.
Imagine a world where you're walking down the street.
And you just can't tell if someone is 80 or 180 years of age. It'll seem like aging was a quaint idea of the 20th century.
Welcome to the future. I'm Guy Raz, searching for the fountain of youth. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
And you can hear the TED Radio Hour Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock and a rebroadcast Wednesday evenings at 11.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, everything you need to know about raising chickens. Joining me today, Donna Coffin of the University of Maine's Cooperative Extension, and Lisa Steele, author of books and on the subject and online resources about raising chickens. We also have Justin Bergeron, an assistant state veterinarian. Give us a call. The number 800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. I'll open this one up to the panel. It's a question that my son, who is here in the other room, had for us, which is, how do you keep chickens from eating their own eggs? I often see the empty shells when I go out there, and I'm pretty sure it's not a predator that ate them because they have egg all over their face. But Donna, why do they do this, and can you do anything to stop them?
It might be a number of reasons, but something might be missing in their diet. It might be, not enough salt or not enough water or, some type of nutrient issue. Mm-hmm. And it's just to try to stop. Once they start doing it, it's like they might keep doing it. So you need to be very vigilant about getting the eggs out just as soon as they're laid so you don't give them that opportunity.
And if one does it, the others will kind of follow if they, right? Sometimes.
I'm not sure. It's usually one perpetrator and then
it is.
They'll
yeah,
keep doing it.
One bad egg eater. in there.
And I did want to comment on the bedding. It's important not to have any wet bedding. So if there's any wet spots, those certainly need to be dealt with immediately. And your watering system, we're trying to encourage people to go to nipple waterers instead of having the bell waterers.
Right.
I was to prevent that moisture.
I'm going to testify to this because I discovered the nipples. I got the last set of poultry nipples at my local store, and I screwed them in to the bottom of a bucket, and they love it. It keeps the water clean. And you can leave the water there for a while. You don't have to check it every day. Is there any downside to that? Is it enough water for them, these little drops at a time?
Oh, it's enough water, and you can put an immersion heater in it. I think it's easier to fill up. If you don't want to use that type of a system, you can put in PVC pipe and put the nipple waterers into the PVC pipe.
Yeah.
You know, just it provides nice clean water to your birds and prevents wet spots.
Yeah. Well, it was. I was amazed how my life had improved with these these little things. Life's simple pleasures. Let's go to Lorna in York. Hi, Lorna.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I'm calling and would like to ask the panel their opinion on parasite control using diatomaceous earth. I have a flock of 10 hens, and I use it in their run. I mix it in with the dirt, and I use it in the coop. I mix it in with the bedding, which I use straw and shavings, pine shavings, all mixed together. And I've read and heard mixed reviews about it. Some people think it works, and other people I've heard say that it's sort of like an old wives' tale. And I'm just curious of the opinion of the panel.
All right.
I've used it for years, and I do believe that it works. I use it pretty much the same way you do. Mine do have a dust bath area with some dirt and some sand and wood ash, and I mix it in there. I mean, I've never had a problem with any kind of external parasites. So, and I've never used like a front line or a seven dust or anything like that. So I think when you kind of weigh all the pros and cons, you know, it's natural as long as you're using it responsibly and you're not just tossing the dust all over the place, because it can cause respiratory issues like any fine powder would. But that's probably the only downside to it that I would say. And I say if it's working, keep using it.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't have a parasite problem, and I haven't, and I do use it. I've also read that you can put it in their food, and it will help with internal parasites as well, just a little bit of a sprinkle of it, not a lot.
Well, it helps keep the bugs out of their feed. I've actually heard that cereal companies put it into cereal for human consumption, so it's most definitely safe for internal use as well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate that. That's the information.
All right. Thank you, Lorna. Chickens, of course, have this digestive system that's slightly different from ours. But do we need to give them grit or stones? I've read that they need access to having something in their crop to help grind up the food. Do you have to provide that, or can they just get that on their own? We'll ask Justin first, I guess.
Well, most prepared chicken diets don't need it. Any extra grit, they get that just fine, and it's a fine enough meal. It depends on what you're feeding them. If they've got access to stones outside and a little bit of grit outside, I've found that yard birds do really well finding their own. It all depends on what you're going to feed them.
Right. So if you give them scraps on top of maybe – they eat a lot of scraps, you should provide – but you have to buy them – you don't have to buy them special grit.
Yeah, it's not just going out and grabbing some sand and throwing it inside of their coop.
When would you feed them oyster shell? Is that to help strengthen their own shells?
Anybody? I haven't had any experience with feeding them oyster shells with having any good luck. In theory, yes, it's supposed to add some calcium, but I find that most prepared diets have enough of what they need in them.
Mine won't eat the oyster shell. I've tried. I've done taste tests. And I do crush our eggshells and feed them back to them, but which they love. But the oyster shell that you buy commercially, they are just not interested in.
Uh-huh. And I know they love cracked corn. They go nuts over it. Does it do anything for them nutritionally, or is it purely chicken potato chips? Yeah. Go ahead, Donna.
I was going to say it's certainly a source of carbohydrates, and most poultry feed, if you look at the ingredients label, corn is usually right up near the top.
Yeah. Justin, did you want to add something?
No, I was just going to say that it's a great source of energy for them, but a lot like any body, if you have too much energy, it's not good for them. They need the mix of things, and corn itself doesn't have everything it needs in it for that chicken.
All right. Let's go to Tim, who's calling from the county. Hi, Tim.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. My issue is we have about 18 birds, and unfortunately, our weasel got to quite a few of them, so we got some chicks in the spring. And we had silvers, and we just recently purchased barbrocks. And we're trying to integrate the two together, and the silvers are just so aggressive. They pick on each other. They pick at the barbrocks. And I'm just wondering if there's some way that we could integrate these without having two separate groups.
Yeah. Who's the chicken whisperer here? There are various bits of advice about integrating stranger chickens to each other. But Lisa?
Oh, chickens are so mean. They're the original mean girls. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems that my readers have is thinking that you can just get new chickens and put them into your – I mean, for biosecurity reasons, that's a terrible idea. But even once you're past that, it's got to be behind fencing, the two groups behind fencing next to each other for weeks until – you know, they stop and then let them free range maybe a little bit together and see how everyone's acting. But yeah, they're tough. They do not like newcomers at all. It's a threat to the pecking order.
But after a few weeks separated but in proximity,
so they
they'll
can
get
see
used
each
to
other,
each other.
Hopefully.
And so you wouldn't want to put chicks in with adults.
No.
And I haven't done that. I actually have two separate pens that they can see each other. There's a fence between them. And this has gone on for, well, since they were chicks. They're now almost 5 months old. So they've seen each other for the better part of 4 months.
Mm. Chicken dinners?
Yeah, they are funny that way.
I got to put my whistle and my referee shirt on. He's got the bar.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, Tim, good luck. It is a tough task. Maybe a bit more patience will do the trick. Let's go to Pam in Camden. Hi, Pam.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I hope this wasn't covered previously. I did have to pop out a couple of times. And I would just like to know a little bit more about using chickens to control ticks. I certainly understand that one should not rely on chickens to protect themselves from ticks, but wondering if chickens actually consume a significant number of ticks and if there are any breeds that are particularly attracted to ticks.
Yeah. Pam, we did get to this question earlier, but that's okay because I'm sure other people have the same question. Donna, as you mentioned before, it shouldn't be your sole tick prevention strategy, but they do consume ticks. And the other part of Pam's question was, are there some breeds that are known for hunger for ticks, guinea hens or guinea fowl, for example?
Well, it's just if they're out and, you know, ranging around, they're going to eat what's there. The question is if the ticks are going to be right in that immediate area. If they're they're not going to go out to the edge of the woods and mm-hmm. seek out ticks. It's like, there's a tick. Maybe I'll eat it.
Right. They're not on the hunt, for them. But if they're handy, they'll eat them. So. Yeah, so Pam, I guess they're I've heard this too, and this has always been, we got chickens for ticks, but it's not a great strategy. It's probably just a minor benefit, I guess would be the answer. Best of luck. Let's go to Allison in Union. Hi, Allison.
Hi, just a quick comment. I want to remind people that from farms or from backyard chicken keeping, there is sometimes when you're driving down the road, a chicken in the road. They are, of course, not known for their ability to get from point A to point B rapidly. And the thing I hate is I came home to the other night with a roadkill chicken. So just remember, sometimes there's a chicken on the road and you have to slow down.
Yeah, a good reminder. Thank you, Allison. Susan on Facebook asks, how about meat birds? Any specific concerns or accommodations? We mentioned broilers at the top, but I guess I'll ask you first, Donna. Is this a different game, meat birds, than it is for laying hens?
Well, the key is you have to feed the correct feed for a meat bird. A layer, you're trying to raise them slower. So it's not it's a different feed formulation. And, you know, they have starter feeds for broilers and grower feeds for broilers, keeping them dry, keeping them watered, protecting them from predators. Those are the big things.
And that's it. And then when would you when I guess is the optimum time for how do I put this, sending them to market?
Harvesting?
Yes.
Usually 8 weeks. Some folks will get like 25 broilers and they might start harvesting them at 7 weeks and then keep them growing up to 10 weeks.
So there's not even any egg production at all because of...
No.
Yeah.
No.
I see. How common is that for backyard chicken folks, Lisa? Are there many meat birds?
I know a lot of towns actually don't allow you to process chickens in your in your yard, in your neighborhood. And I think a lot of the new backyard chicken keepers, as I mentioned, they didn't come from farming families. So eating their pets really isn't in the equation. But I think a lot of them are thinking about the dual purpose birds, where you pretty much lay them as you raise them as layers, but then you might eat them, say, you know, 2 years down the road or 3 years down the road when production falls off a little bit. And I think that is something that people get into, as well as the broilers, which are pretty much quick production.
And if you just can't do that, but you also can't keep your chickens, maybe you don't have room after they're laying, is there an old chicken's home for unproductive layers? Will farms take them or what?
I think farms would probably take them and tell you that they'll live a long, happy life and, you know.
But not necessarily
Not necessarily so.
I see. All right. Well, with
and
that.
And I will mention that you don't necessarily have to process them yourself. There are commercial processors. There's also Commonwealth Poultry is our new USDA processing facility for poultry.
All right. Lisa, Donna, Justin, thank you all for being here. We're out of time. It's gone very quickly, but appreciate you being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa Steele keeps chickens and is the author of books on raising poultry, as well as a blog called Fresh Eggs Daily. And Donna Coffin, a professor with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. Justin Bergeron, an assistant state veterinarian with the state of Maine. John Keimel ran the board today. Cindy Hahn answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join host Jennifer Rooks for a discussion about children's books. Maine is fertile ground for children's authors. What goes into creating books for our youngest readers? I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.